Hey everyone, I'm Angela Nguyen.
And I'm Alam Ibrahim.
And you're listening to Radioactive's May Podcast.
The last time you heard us together was last summer when we talked about high school athletes in the Northwest. Today, the dynamic duo is back and we're focusing on issues in Seattle.
More specifically, we'll be hearing some Seattle students' viewpoints regarding standardized testing.
We'll also look at diversity issues in the Tukwila School District.
After that, we're going back in time to relive the civil war in Sri Lanka from one journalist's point of view. And finally, we'll recap Islamophobia Awareness Day, which happened in April, right here in Seattle.
But before we get started, I want to catch up with you, Angela. I know you finished your freshman year at Washington State University. You go, girl. Congrats.
Don't you mean coog-grats? Aw, thanks, Alam.
Of course. Now, can you tell me about some of the struggles you faced as a freshman?
I get back, and the first thing you ask me about are my weaknesses.
Girl, where you get that sassy from?
Okay. What kind of struggles? There are quite a few being a first year in college.
School, professors, classes, all that.
Okay, let's see. Lecture halls weren't as scary as I thought they'd be. My professors were nice, and classes were way more interesting than they were in high school.
Don't even get me started. I'm still in high school.
Oh, yeah. How is life for you going at Rainier Beach? I heard you'll be student body president.
Yes, following your footsteps. I'm so excited for that and also becoming a senior next year. A part of me is ready to graduate.
And why is that?
It can get really stressful with the amount of schoolwork and activities I have going on. Also to think about college, but remembering that you have to graduate first. And then testing.
That's right. I had to take the HSP, which was the High School Proficiency Exam.
I did too, but this year they also wanted us to take the Smarter Balanced Assessment, also known as the SBAC.
They wanted you to take it, so you didn't have to take it?
It's not a graduation requirement for juniors this year, which is why some people didn't take it. I interviewed some of my classmates on how they felt about the SBAC.
I just feel like it's time-consuming.
It was easy in some parts, but challenging in others.
I think it was long and hard, and they should take it out of the system.
I think it's a pointless test.
Why is that?
Because students don't need it to graduate.
It's not really necessary.
You just got to do it for the state. They make you do it. They just want to see where you are.
The HSP, if we didn't pass it the first time around, we wouldn't get our diploma, but the SBAC, we don't need to pass it in order to get our diploma, so we prioritize other things before that.
I feel like it's added pressure for students who already have to take a whole bunch of standardized tests, like the HSP and the SAT and all these things.
And, you know, on top of that, we have to do the SBAC, and it takes up a lot of time.
So I feel like we don't need another barrier that keeps us from getting accepted into college. I think they should just get rid of it. Why test us so many times? I mean, our knowledge is not going to change from taking a test like last week to this week.
Ah, that reminds me. Some of my friends at Meadowdale High School took the SBAC last week, and they said it wasn't as bad as they thought it'd be.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's just long and annoying.
Oh, you mean like roller coaster ride lines, right?
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Angela, have you heard about what happened in the Tukwila School District?
No, what?
Teachers in the Tukwila area voiced their opinions regarding race-based hiring practices. Let's hear more about that.
The Tukwila School District has one of the most diverse student bodies in the state, but the NAACP of Seattle King County says the district is not doing enough to hire teachers of color. The civil rights organization confronted the district's board members last night about what it calls, quote, racist hiring practices. Nancy Coogan is superintendent of the Tukwila School District. She says the NAACP's accusations are unfair.
That's very hurtful and truly not what we're trying to do in Tukwila, and certainly not what I've tried to do in my career as an educator. I want to hire the best and the brightest teacher to be in front of our students every day.
Coogan has led the Tukwila District for just 2 years. She says they've increased efforts to recruit teachers of color and that it's a top priority. Currently, 25% of the district's teachers are non-white. That's compared to a student body that's 85% non-white. Alexis Mosley is a junior at Foster High School in the Tukwila District.
I think it's kind of odd that we're known for being like the most diverse school, and yet our staff doesn't also show that too.
Mosley refers to herself as mixed race and says she identifies more with teachers of color. In a statement, the NAACP blasted the district for failing to hire people of color for 18 open positions. The district says that's incorrect and that half of the offers so far have gone to racial minorities. KUOW's youth media producer Azeb Tuji contributed to this report. Jamala Henderson, KUOW News.
Much respect to all the teachers who stand up for what they believe in. Honestly, I think they deserve a round of applause.
Someone else who deserves a round of applause is one woman from Sri Lanka. She risked her life to report on her country's civil war in 1983.
Kamna Shastri from Radioactive captures her inspiring story.
There is something in the way Frederica Jens talks about the past. She leans back with ease, her eyes crinkle when she smiles. She says Sri Lankans have an interesting way of remembering tragedy.
They have this thing about them that even when they're recounting a tragedy, they will talk smiling.
1983, Colombo, Sri Lanka. Jans was just finishing high school when the civil war broke out. The war was fueled by tensions between the Sinhalese majority and the Tamil minority population. Jan stumbled into the world of journalism a few years after the violence began. From the start, she was thrust into the front lines of the war. Jan recalls an incident from her early days as a journalist. She was covering a battle between Sri Lanka's army and the Tamil Tigers. She says a helicopter came to airlift her team from the conflict zone and also picked up a wounded soldier.
And I still recall sitting in that chopper, and this man was laid on the floor, and I kind of held him, and he died even before we could land.
1994. Jans joined the Sunday Leader, an independently run English language newspaper. Sri Lanka's media outlets faced government censorship, but the Sunday Leader was not deterred.
We focused on investigative journalism, and we said it as we saw it. It took guts to be able to write and say it as is, you know, and I think that is very important.
The paper wasn't run by Tamils, but it boldly pointed fingers at government corruption and ill-treatment of the Tamil people.
And it was different. It was something very different in that society. There were people who loved it, there were people who hated it. And of course, we angered every single government.
The paper's brazen moves did cause them to pay a high price. Individuals were targeted with threats. Once, the presses even burnt down. 2009. The Sunday Leader's editor was murdered in the middle of the street. Then Jans had to fill his shoes. Her position was burdensome, but Jans was willing. She had a larger goal in mind.
I had a vision, and that was to change the way people thought, to make them more proactive, and make them understand that as a nation, as a people, that they had a voice and that they actually could do something about it.
July 2012. Jans reported a story that would change her life forever. The Defense Secretary of Sri Lanka, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, had ordered a friend to fly a plane to Switzerland and pick up a puppy dog for his wife. The pilot friend took over a passenger plane, leaving 53 people grounded. Jans was covering the story, so she called Rajapaksa for comment.
And this man just went mad. He went berserk. He screamed abuse at me, calling me an effing pig who eats shit. You know, he just repeatedly screamed this. I was stunned. In fact, I remember telling him, I said, Mr. Rajapaksa, I wish you can hear yourself.
Jans went ahead and published the article along with Rajapaksa's tirade. The story was quickly picked up by international news outlets. At around the same time, an ally of the president offered to buy the paper on the condition that Jans would be dismissed. In September 2012, the paper was bought out. Jans was fired. And then weird things started to happen.
I started getting followed home by unidentified men on motorbikes. I got an abusive phone call threatening me.
Jan says her lawyers warned her that her passport could be impounded.
My family appealed to me and they were like, you know, you're a mother, you have two sons. And they were very afraid that I was going to be killed. And that actually appeared very likely. So we had to pack our bags and leave within a week, which is what I did. And that's how we arrived here.
2015, Seattle, Washington. Jan's living room is softly lit by lamplight. A few burning candles dance in a bowl of water on her coffee table. Gray comes in through the windows, a contrast to Sri Lanka's tropical scenery.
I wanted to remain in Sri Lanka, you know. I wanted my children to grow up there. That was my whole life. I didn't want to leave, ever.
Jans arrived in Seattle in 2012. Everything was new and unfamiliar. Jans looked for a job in journalism, but couldn't find one. In Sri Lanka, Jans had designed and furnished her own home. After 18 months searching for a job in Seattle, she went back to school and studied interior design. Now Jans works as an interior designer.
It's just rewarding. You know, you're playing with colors and always beautiful things. You know, you're just doing something that's just nice and stress-free. So
Jans hopes to move up the career ladder of interior design. In the meantime, she's still piecing together a life for herself.
I lived it, you know, being a journalist. So I think I absorbed it completely. It's hard to differentiate if there are two people, Frederica as the woman or Frederica as the journalist. It was just me being a journalist, which is what I loved. And here I have had to force myself to think outside of that box, perhaps.
Jans is still fond of journalism. She's a contributor for the Seattle Globalist. In Sri Lanka, Jans used her pen hoping to inspire the identity of a nation. But now, it's time to craft an identity all her own. For Radioactive, I'm Kamna Shastri.
You're right. That was very inspiring. Round of applause, please. There's one more person who should be receiving a round of applause today.
Who?
Yo. Miss Alam Ibrahim was in charge of the first Islamophobia Awareness Day.
To better explain the event, here's Radioactive's Iman Muhammad.
The sun is peeking through the clouds at Victor Steinbrück Park in downtown Seattle. I am at the first ever Islamophobia Awareness Day. It was created by a group of Muslim girls from Rainier Beach High School. They were motivated for this event by how Muslims are portrayed in the media. Nafisa Igal is a freshman at the University of Washington. She learned about the event through Facebook, so she decided to show up and support her Muslim sisters.
The people that you see on the news and in the media that are extreme, like, that's not really a part of Islam. Islam doesn't teach that. Islam teaches you to be a good person and teaches you to be peaceful. So I want you guys to take away that Islam is peaceful.
At this event, youth set up stations with information about Islam along with cupcakes and sambusas. At 1:30, a dozen girls stand in straight lines praying Salatul Dhuhr, the midday prayer. At the hijab station, Hannah Corpez is learning how to put the Muslim headscarf on.
So they've put a hijab on my head, and it's kind of interesting because I never really knew how the process worked or if you have to like do your hair in a certain way. It's really comfortable.
How do you feel?
Oh, I still feel like me. So, yeah, it doesn't really change you in any way.
Later that day, the youth post on Instagram saying the event was a success. They're speaking with mosques in Australia, London, Spain, and Holland in hopes of making this a global event next year. For Radioactive, this is Iman Muhammad.
So, Alam, I heard your voice in the background. Can you tell me what you were doing?
Also my mom's. Basically, I was explaining to people the main concept of what is it like to be a Muslim and how people should not be scared of Islam and how this phobia should end.
You must have been tired from having to repeat yourself because you were out there for what, 2 hours?
It was actually for 4 hours, but it was worth it. I would have repeated it 100 times if I could.
Here's that round of applause for you, my friend. Our last round of applause goes to all those who helped make this podcast possible.
Jenny Asarno and Lila Katayev, our program producers.
Anne Kane, our lovely production assistant.
Azeb Tuji, Kamna Shastri, and Iman Muhammad, our lovely Radioactive reporters.
And all you lovelies for listening to our podcast. Make sure you check us out at kuow.org/radioactive for other stories and podcasts from our advanced producers.
You can also post your comments on there or follow us on Twitter at kuowradioactive. Check out our Facebook page too. It's Radioactive Youth Media. I am Alam Ibrahim.
And I'm Angela Nguyen.
Deuces!